Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 162. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Rob. It sure has been a minute.
Yeah, it has been a while. We have we've been off for a couple months, not off entirely, just off from the podcast. We've been busy with some other stuff. Had a lot of work leading up to the election last week, and yes, we should discuss. Mm-hmm. We just ran a story on Monday, kind of looking back at the big picture election security for November 3rd and after. And happy to say, Alex, that despite, and we're going to go through sort of everything that we were rightfully concerned about leading up to last Tuesday, but there were a lot of concerns. I was very fearful as to what might take place leading up to Election Day or on Election Day or even after Election Day. And I'm happy to report that so far, knock on wood, fingers crossed, there are no reports and no signs and no evidence from a variety of sources, not the least of which is CISA, that there have been no cyber attacks, no hacking, no election hacking, no vote hacking, no voting machine hacks, no ransomware attacks. None of the things that we were concerned about happening have taken place, thankfully.
That we know of.
And we'll get to that. We'll touch on, you know, how sure are we with everything mm-hmm. that's been going on. But I guess for me, Alex, I'll tell you honestly that the thing that was really concerning to me was when Christopher Krebs, CISA director, I think this is what was back in Black Hat in August, mm-hmm. When he talked about how he was concerned, one of his primary concerns about election season was a ransomware attack on a local, state, or city government network that was going to disrupt the voting, that was going to shut down that network, that infrastructure, and prevent vote tallies, prevent voting. I was really worried about that because I know, you know, you've written a little bit about this. Ariel, our colleague, Ariel Waldman, security news writer, has also written about this. There's been a lot of attacks on localities, local governments, county governments, towns, cities, and states too. Crippling attacks, really, really expensive ransomware attacks that have ground things to a halt. And mm-hmm. I was concerned about it. And I had a pit in my stomach. Like, you know, regardless of the results of the election, of any of the elections and political affiliations, like I really had a pit like in my stomach leading up to this about, oh God, I really hope that there isn't a cyber attack. I really hope that there's not some ransomware attack. I don't want to see this like entire day, this entire process just be thrown into chaos. And that was my big fear. I don't know about, you know, like what you were feeling or how confident you were that things were going to go off, you know, without a hitch. But I didn't have a lot of confidence. I guess I'm a pessimist by nature, but I was really fearful of some type of ransomware attack throwing everything off. How about you?
Yeah, so ransomware has been on my mind for the last few months, independent of the election, just because, like, I've written, we've all written, Ariel, myself, and you have obviously dabbled in it plenty. Ransomware in the last few months. There's in the story we wrote on Search Security, like one of the things I wrote was that ransomware has been rising in recent years in pretty much every single sector that you can think of. In general, but like also if you break it down, like enterprise organizations, it's been going way up. Like we wrote a story about how many big companies reported ransomware attacks. Not reported ransomware attacks, but there were reported ransomware attacks against these companies. We've read all about municipalities over the last couple of years that have been mm-hmm. hit by ransomware, which was the main concern here. and healthcare organizations. We just did a story on hospitals getting hit by ransomware. So there was something in the back of my head. I wouldn't call it a pit in my stomach thing because, I don't know. I didn't expect anything that extreme to happen. Mm. Like that was the pit in my stomach. Mm. But I was still thinking in the back of my head, like, ransomware has infected all of these different parts of our society so aggressively in such a relatively short period of time, and it's gotten really bad specifically in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what's stopping this election or parts of this election, even down ballot stuff or smaller local stuff, from getting manipulated and this being the centerpiece of the last couple of years, right? So yeah. I definitely had those movie, would you still, if it's a bad fantasy that like you don't want, would you still call it a fantasy?
Yeah, sure.
These negative fantasies of the election sort of going the wrong way in terms of election security. But of course, as you can say, I'm sure, and of course, as so many people in cybersecurity can say, we are very happy about the fact that not much actually went down in the election security sense, as far as we know.
Yes, yes. I mean, there were some warning signs, and we got into this in the story that we posted on Monday. But there was a lot of misinformation. There were active misinformation campaigns out there, many of them for a long while. You wrote about one of them with the suspected Iranian hackers that launched the Proud Boys email, the threat. Like if you don't vote for Trump, you're or you better vote for Trump or else
exclamation point. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. There was a hastily put together press conference to address that and throw cold water on it. There was after that press conference, there was something that CISA disclosed about how the Iranian hackers, in this case, they believe they got into at least one state network and obtained voter registration information. That's how they were able to sort of target these emails with their propaganda video and the misinformation, again, purportedly from the Proud Boys, to target specific individuals in a specific state. Now, they didn't say which state, but, you know, the fact that they got inside a voter registration database is nothing to sort of scoff at. Misinformation campaigns are, again, nothing to sort of take lightly. There's been a lot of activity for the last several years, dating as far back to 2015, 2016. But overall, it does feel like we dodged a bullet. I am wondering how much of that was just sort of luck. Because as you noted, Alex, I mean, you wrote that story about the hospital attacks and sort of what happens when a hospital attacks. The hackers know that. They're not shy about that. They know what can happen when a hospital is attacked. Their you know, lives could be at risk. So if you're thinking that, and there were alerts that went out about this, you know, government alerts from CISA, the FBI, there are impending attacks coming on U.S. Healthcare organizations, specifically hospitals. That was last month. If that's happening, like you said, there's no reason why they wouldn't attack election infrastructure. Especially if they were trying to make a buck, and you got a county or a town that's in the middle of an election, it's maybe a swing state. They can't afford the downtime. They can't afford to be knocked off, for a day or two. Maybe they would pay. You don't know. But I getting back to my point about luck, we also wrote about the TrickBot takedowns, and I do wonder, like, you know, maybe that did have an effect. Maybe there could have been an attack, because I don't think U.S. Cyber Command, if it was U.S. Cyber Command that conducted the technical takedown, and it was Microsoft and a few other vendor partners that performed the legal takedown, I don't think they would have done that if they didn't feel like there was a real risk that something might happen in the coming weeks and months, and maybe involving the election. So do you think we just got lucky, or do you think that maybe there was other stuff going on that limited the attack surface, so to speak? Maybe it was just improvements from state and local governments. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not willing to go that far, actually.
I mean, we won't go too deep into this, but it's worth noting that even though, like, yes, we did get away, we did dodge a bullet, it seems, in the hacking territory, hopefully. There have been misinformation, either campaigns or not campaigns, but still widespread misinformation,
yeah,
that has greatly complicated the election process, which has gone from the thing you're going to bring up in just a second to debates about what even defines misinformation that I was reading this morning.
Yeah.
And I guess if misinformation is in our wheelhouse as a cybersecurity outlet, and I think it often is, at least in my personal opinion, it definitely dabbles. Minimum, it dabbles. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to say that this was a painless, scar-free election based on what's happened in the last week.
Yeah. Maybe the way to I should rephrase it is, we dodged a bullet, but we're still taking a baseball bat to the knee.
yeah.
Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, I talked about this. I think I said it on Twitter, and I may have thrown it up in our Slack channel or some approximation of it. But, you know, whatever they're paying Chris Krebs at CISA, it's not enough, because – So we wrote about this on Monday. CISA has a rumor control page where they try to address, and other agencies and other people within the government and other private sector partners and nonprofits have worked on this as well. Worked really, really hard on this, and they deserve a lot of credit to sort of address misinformation and disinformation and active measures from foreign ATPs or threat actors, and just domestic homegrown misinformation, and just trying to put people at ease and put out fires and get people to calm down and not overreact to things that they may hear on social media, because there has been a lot of that. And, you know, the case that we brought up in the story on Monday was this conspiracy theory about Hammer and Scorecard. Hammer and Scorecard, allegedly election technology that has been abused by one party to tilt the election in its favor and, steal the election. Now, I hesitate to bring that up because there is, you know, according, and this is coming from CISA now, I think they're a pretty reputable source. There is no truth to that rumor. It's a hoax. That's what Krebs said on Twitter. He retweeted, this is really funny, I got to throw this in. He retweeted this earlier today from the Vermont Secretary of State. If you don't know what this tweet is referring to about Hammer and Scorecard, consider yourself lucky. If you do, you might want to reconsider where you are getting your election information, and please think before you link. So they're tackling, the rumor control on CISA is tackling not just some of the more outlandish stuff, but just sort of basic, you know, hey, you may have heard about this happening with these ballots, or you may have been hearing about, like, you know, this quasi legal theory about how, you know, ballots could be thrown out, or results could be thrown out, or something like that. You know, here's the truth. Here is the real information. And they've been, like I said, they've been working really hard on it, and it's not easy. And, you know, to your point, like, this misinformation can have a pretty drastic effect. I mean, it can whip people up into a frenzy and get them, you know, to do potentially crazy things. And I don't think anybody needs that right now. I think we're still in a very tenuous situation with our, you know, political divide in this country. And, you know, God bless these guys, CISA, and other government agencies and other experts out there working to sort of calm the rhetoric and get good information out there in place of bad information. But you're right. It is a huge concern. I mean, it's huge. I mean, you've seen it. I've seen it play out. It's kind of ugly and it's concerning. So we should turn to, you know, we talked about ransomware. Uh-huh. We should turn to something else that we've covered recently that I think is worth noting. I'd say arguably the most notorious ransomware gang, or at least top two or three, has apparently shut down or shut down a couple weeks ago. Is this correct, Alex? Talk to me about this. Yeah. How confident are we in this? How good can we feel about this latest development?
So here's something that I'm reasonably confident about. The organization known as Maze will at minimum not be called Maze anymore. That's so, what I'm like. And even then, I'm at like 80% certainty. I can give it a B minus on that. Yeah. But Maze, one of the most notorious ransomware gangs, which is interesting considering they've been around for over a year, although things happen fast in this space. They shut down their ransomware operation, which they announced via what they like to call a press release. And they announced, like, hey, they didn't say, hey, I got casualized that too much.
Sure.
Maze team project is announcing it is officially closed. All links to out, presumably our project, using of our brand, our work methods should be considered to be a scam. They're basically saying that they're shutting down completely. There was also never a cartel, which we'll get into in a minute. And then they for a month said that if you want your information taken down from the site, you can contact our support chat, whatever that means. And we don't know if that's free or paid, but I will see.
Yeah.
We probably won't see. Yeah. So Maze is shutting down. However, as Maze shuts down, the notorious ransomware gang known as pioneers of the sort of name and shame ransomware method, where they would not only encrypt data, not only charge a ransom, but also take the data and publish it slowly over the course of a period of time as the victim refuses or ignores or doesn't see requests for payment or whatever. So that's Maze. They shut down. But in their wake, shortly before Maze reportedly closed down, other ransomware operators have risen from the eventual ashes. Egregor?
Yeah. But Egregor is the big one that, I mean, I guess some experts sort of speculate or strongly believe that the Maze guys might be behind. Like they might have just sort of closed down the Maze shop and reopened reopened under a new name, so to speak. Which, I mean, if you were a cyber criminal and you had made a lot of money and you had sort of changed the ransomware gang and you had gotten a lot of victims to pay, I mean, probably, you know, if I was a cyber criminal, I'd probably wouldn't retire. I'd probably stay in the game. I don't know. It's certainly weird. I mean, I know you're working on a follow-up story about this. You know, what are the chances that Egregor is actually just the Maze guys under a new name. Regardless, sort of the name and shame has become, you know, and the news site that puts, you know, all this leaked data out there for the world to see, that's become sort of the de facto standard for ransomware gangs now. This is how it goes. Mm-hmm. And I know that they said that, oh, you know, like, you know, we work with our customers, we try to help them, and there was no cartel. I mean, literally these guys said, you know, used the word cartel on their website and bragged about how they were going to sort of cooperate and communicate and work with other ransomware gangs to sort of mutually beneficial ends, which were to pressure companies to pay them. And now here they are turning around saying there was no cartel. And Alex, I know we've talked about this offline, but that letter, the back half of that letter, pretty mm-hmm. weird. Pretty weird, right?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to explain it a little bit. So the...
Go on. I'd like to see you try. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to give the overview. Sure, I'm not going to... And yeah, and the full text is available online. The first couple paragraphs and the last couple paragraphs had most of the valuable information.
Yep.
From a non-entertainment perspective. The first few talked about how Maze is closing. The bottom half had like a weirdly cryptic message about its future. And then the in-between was this... I don't know, like, what would you describe it as? Rambles? Screed, perhaps?
Yes. I mean, I don't say this lightly. I know we've talked about this offline and I've used this analogy, but to me it was like a quasi Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, like technology, wake up sheeple. You're about to be chipped and tracked. Your will is not your own. Technology will be the demise of us. Screed, like just sort of rambling. And it was very strange. But the thing that really stuck out in that sort of middle part there, which was extensive and just weird, and like I don't even know why you would put that in there, but they talked about how, like, I mean, basically, show us some respect because, hey, yes, we hacked you and we charged you some money to get your data back, but we could have done a lot worse. We could have knocked out the internet. We could have taken down, you know, I don't know if they said power
in
grids.
35 but, states.
Yeah.
Internet in 35 states.
Yeah,
was the
they're like, we could have. We're so good. We could have done X, Y, and Z, and we didn't. So you should appreciate our restraint. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically the message. And to which I would say, get over yourself. That's ridiculous. You guys treat yourself as a business. You had a business model. You were not seeking to create, a countrywide or near countrywide outage. You were seeking to get paid in the quickest and easiest way possible. And you did it. Good for you. Move on. Spare us the belly aching and the whining. And if you want to nail yourself to a cross, go do it on your own time.
Rob, the world is becoming a digital detention camp. And you, specifically you people, the sheep, are becoming a controllable flock.
Oh, my God. I just, man
and,
alive.
And their best reasoning to the group's intention was like five words hidden in there, which was like, yeah, groups like us are to remind you about secure data storage before going on this long like speech about like
it's just
how the world is becoming a digital detention camp and how the wealthy are going to control Bitcoin to control the masses because Bitcoin, as we know, is going to become the world's major currency in the very near future. Maybe, I don't know.
It's just insane, man. It's just insane.
But
it's so good.
And then at the end of the announcement, Mays cryptically spoke of its future. We'll be back to you when the world will be transformed. We will return to show you again the errors and mistakes and to get you out of the maze.
So bizarre.
Which sounds like the end of like a serialized like 50s sci-fi show.
Yeah, it's just, you know, where's your Guy Fawkes mask? I mean, you know, it's bad enough we have to deal with these guys with the ransomware and the hacking and the, you know, the data exposures, but these musings, you know, and the rantings and ravings. I mean, I assume part of that, or even most of it, is probably coming, like, is real. It's not a put on, because it just seems like, why would you do that? Like, why would you sort of dress up your act as being like, look, we're bad hackers and we could have done a lot worse. And you should be thankful and all that. I think there's probably some authenticity there, but it just goes so way over the top. I'm not really sure what they were hoping to do with that. Certainly is bizarre. And we, I mean, neither one of us, I just want to, you know, as we wrap up here, neither one of us thinks these guys are retiring or going anywhere, right?
Yeah. In fact, I could use this as an opportunity to tease my two follow-ups.
Sure.
Story. Okay. So in the very near future, within, let's say, a couple days of when this goes live, maybe the same day, we'll see, but very soon after, around the time this podcast comes out, there will be an article going up about the connection, the possible connection between McGregor and Mays. And the little tease I'll give, which kind of, there's going to be more in the story, but what I'll say is, like, no one I've talked to is, like, extremely confident, like, this is definitely what's happening. But a lot are like, there's definitely weight to the theory that either Mays people started McGregor, or people who were associated with it in the past started McGregor. We don't have like concrete knowledge, and the story will obviously reflect that, but there's the people I've talked to, the threat analysts and whatnot, seem fairly confident that, like, they agree that there's weight to the theory without fully committing to, like, saying this is true.
Yeah, not going so far to say there's a definite connection, but saying that there's enough there to at least publicly suggest it, hint at it, speculate on it, informed speculation.
Exactly. The second story I'm working on, which is, it started as, like, not a joke, but kind of like, here's something weird I noticed about ransomware gangs, which has turned into, like, a piece I'm pretty excited about, is the fact that, like, Mays and a lot of other ransomware gangs sort of treat themselves like services companies, and they refer to the people they're victimizing as clients and partners. And they're talking about their support chat as if they're a company, and they're sort of like working, they have this like nobility angle to them. And there are other ransomware operators that have done similar things, at least in part. Some of this, at least one has done like a very similar thing, and then a couple others have also used the word clients. And what's going to be interesting, I think, about writing that article, and I won't say what people said to me yet, because it could be maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks out. We're still figuring that out. But everyone had something different to say.
Yeah.
Like, no, they had all these very educated people I talked to had their own ideas. And some of them, at least some of them, maybe all, have looked into the issue in full. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it is a weird one. I mean, it seems like a pointless put on again. Like, why go through the act of pretending like you're a, you know, a semi legit services company, and that you're doing some type of good, and that you are helping, quote unquote, your clients by showing them where they've been, where they're weak, and obviously charging them to get their data back, charging them big fees. But, you know, I do wonder, we have wondered, and I'm sure other analysts and threat researchers have wondered and discussed this, is like it, maybe that is a better tact to go with your victims, sort of a more user-friendly or customer-friendly approach than to be sort of the threatening hacker and saying, mm-hmm. give me your data or else, or you know, give me the money or else. Or I mean, I know they still sort of do that too, but it's a different vibe to it. And maybe that helps them in the long run. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, Maze has really changed a lot about how these threat actors operate in the ransomware space. It really changed the threat landscape. And this is not to praise them in any way, because they're criminals, they're awful, and I hope they get caught. But it's had an effect, an undeniable effect, and they're not going anywhere. They're coming back somehow, some way. So we'll see.
Yep.
I guess we should wrap up there, Alex. We've been talking for a while, and we've covered a lot. You know, we may have dodged a bullet, like I said, taking a little bit of beating with the misinformation. We'll continue to be covering any type of election security news or developments out there as the votes continue to be counted and this continues. And we'll see what happens with the ransomware gangs out there as well. We'll stay on that, too. Alex, thank you for joining me on this post-election podcast.
Of course, Rob. Thank you for having me.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.